Hello, everyone. Welcome to Ubi Est Mia. My name is Brandon Weatherby. This episode is with former Chicagoan, current New York resident, Megan Gailey. Megan Gailey is an excellent stand-up comic and actress, and you could find her on the TV and on the internet and all the sorts of wonderful stuff. We talk about her time in Chicago, her time in a retirement home, and much, much more. Without further ado, here's Megan Gailey.
I talk pretty loud.
We're both loudspeakers.
God, being with my mom I love this woman dearly.
Your mother.
Dearly, dearly, dearly.
Yes.
She's so loud. I mean, it's like you have to tell her like inside voice, like she's a child. She's just like, ah! Like she gets so excited. She would have seen your cat and like scream/cried. She didn't even like cats, but everything is like a new and wonderful. I mean, it's...
That's good.
It is, but it's like...
Your brother isn't loud at all.
No.
Well, he's not quiet either.
My dad is loud, too. No, today we were like making fun of her because she was telling a story for 7 hours. And then a story that literally no one had asked to hear. And then she was like, well, you know, I just get so excited when I'm not with dad because I finally get to talk. And it's like, bitch, you talk nonstop no matter who you are with.
Are your parents are comfortable being in your act? Because when I first met you, you didn't talk about them as much. You talked about them, but it was like you were a child, so it's like, who cares?
Yeah.
Now it's current stuff.
Yeah, my dad, don't know.
You mean your dad was offended that you went on national television and talked
about... called him an alcoholic?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he has his own way of like coping with it. Like sometimes he'll look at me and just be like, oh, I'm such an alcoholic, remember? And I'm like, I mean, but like... I do, actually. I do remember.
So the art has become truth.
Yeah. It's... he's fine. You know,
he's an adult man.
He'll forward me every email someone sends him being like, you're not that bad. He sends me those.
Are those his work friends in Indiana?
Those are all of his friends.
Those are all... Because, I mean, like attracts like, and I'm assuming they also do the exact same things as your father.
He's on a different level.
Okay. All right. So, yeah, we're going to talk about Chicago because that's how we met.
Woo woo.
I'm from there. You're not from there.
I'm not from there.
I could tell you're not from there because you're wearing an Indianapolis Colts themed sweater.
Just Colts blue.
Do you want a lot of blue? I feel
I
like
own
you do.
So much blue.
Is it all because of the Colts?
Well, some of it's because of the Colts, but some of it is this is sort of like, I love this color. You know, this is a good color on me.
Sure. But. Isn't any color a good color on you as long
no,
as it's like, okay.
Not like mustard yellow.
Okay.
I would be very sad if I was a Vikings fan. I would be very sad if I was a Redskins fan. You know, that Browns, those are not, Colts blue is like very regal and beautiful.
What about Chicago Bears navy blue?
Navy's nice. I do not like orange. I think orange is a color of
What about for college teams? I feel like orange for college teams is perfectly fine, but for professionals, maybe not. I like stronger colors, like a red, a black.
Yeah, orange is silly. It's just like no one is taking you seriously.
Could we? What about the Flyers? The Flyers are the one team that embrace orange, and I think they do it really well.
Yeah, I mean, Purdue is gold and black.
That's pretty good for college.
It is cool, but like sometimes you can't find like sparkly gold, so it's this like weird... mustard color, and it's like that's
did you go to Purdue?
I did.
Are you glad you went to Purdue?
Very much so. It was very cheap.
So that's cheap. Because you were in state.
Yeah, so cheap.
And then did you go straight from Purdue to Chicago?
I went to Indianapolis for about 6 months.
Why? And
because I didn't have a job. I mean, I graduated in 2008, so I didn't have a job. And I mean, I didn't even look for a job, so it wasn't like, the economy's bad. I was just like, I don't like to work.
What's your major? Or what was your major?
Communications with an emphasis in sports broadcasting.
Which you thought would lead to what?
Literally nothing. And I think for a little bit I was like, I'll be a sideline girl. But it was like, I don't like editing. I don't like filming. I didn't want
to. So you just wanted to be on-camera talent.
Yeah, and in like the 70s, that happened. But now you have to like do stuff. And I don't want to do anything. And
usually
then,
not doing stuff, not wanting to do extra things doesn't lead to stand-up.
I think it does,
okay.
Actually.
We'll explore that idea.
And then I was a theater major, too.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. Why are you, you're thanks. Literally rolling your eyes?
No, because that's like kind of insulting.
Not at all. You go on stage and don't have fear. You talk in front of people mm-hmm. without prompt. No mm-hmm. one's forcing you to do this. Theater yeah. to me makes the most sense. It's a logical extension of that.
But a lot of...
And you take offense to that. You chose well, that major.
I know, because saying you're a... like, when you meet someone and you hate them, and then they're like, I went to theater school. You're like, of course you did. You know, like, it's just, it's sort of like a...
How often do you meet people and hate them?
In New York? Often.
Because you're in New York now. You love Chicago.
Yeah, I love it.
Okay, you love New York or Chicago?
Oh, I hate New York. I love Chicago.
Okay, so let's get... Okay, you're in Indianapolis for 6 months.
Yes, and that was... My grandmother was living with us, so I, like, helped out with her.
Okay.
And then all my friends had jobs.
I'm assuming when you say us, you mean your parents.
Yeah, my parents.
Okay.
So I was there for, 6 months, and then I went to Chicago.
Why Chicago?
Well, I did explore the idea of going to New York. But it's expensive. All the reasons I didn't want to move there then are the reasons I hate it now. I have no friends there. No, I have, it's fine.
You have a ton of friends. You're a liar.
I know. I do have some friends. But it's expensive. It was very daunting. And I hadn't really done stand up. So it didn't make sense to like move there having never done this.
Sure.
Chicago, I had a lot of friends from college there. My brothers had both lived there. My parents lived there when I was in college. And it was like a very natural step to go from Indianapolis, Purdue to Chicago.
Sure,
a lot of
sure.
people do that.
When you went to Chicago, you said you had barely been doing stand-up or you mm-hmm. had not done it at all?
I had done it in Indianapolis for like 3 months.
Okay. That's why.
And I like thought I like did it. You know, like I was like, I do it.
No offense to the Indianapolis scene, but maybe you were like the cream of the crop with 3 months in.
I mean, it's crazy to after 3 months be like, I think I need to make the next step, you know?
You kind of did.
It was, for some reason at the time, I knew that stage time was very important. And I don't know how I knew that, but I just did.
Okay.
And so I knew that indie, for me, the way that I wanted to do it was not going to be enough stage time.
Sure. So it's 2008 to 2009.
This right is I moved to Chicago in 2009.
In 2009. Do you remember where you moved?
Of course.
Sorry.
So my mom drove me up and we stayed. It was the Super Bowl. We stayed at the Marriott on Michigan the night before I moved in. And one of my ex-boyfriends from college worked there. So he came and the Marriott had like a little chili party for the Super Bowl. It was great. So my mom and I ate chili. And watched the Super Bowl with my ex-boyfriend. And then the next day, I moved into this apartment that was on Wellington and Sheridan. So, actually, east of Lakeshore.
It's just perfect for you.
Yeah, I lived on... It was unfair because I lived on the 22nd floor, full panoramic view. I mean, the building was old and someone definitely died in our apartment. But the view was amazing.
Do you remember how much your rent was?
I think I paid. So I lived with my brother Michael's best friend from high school.
Okay.
Whose name is Jason.
Okay.
Who clearly could afford way more and like ended up not even being there that much, but is just such a kind-hearted man and I think wanted to like help take care of me.
Sure.
So I think I paid like $600.
$600. Do you want to tell people how much you're paying now?
Now I pay $775, but
that's really cheap for New York.
That's four people in a three bedroom.
Yeah.
So my boyfriend and I pay $1,450 for our one room. So yeah. So it's like $770. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. You said it was cheap, and now you're laughing at me.
Yeah, that's exactly how much I thought it was. You proved my point. Thank you so much. Okay, so you moved to Chicago. What were you going to do for money? Did you have a plan?
Yeah. Listen, I'm a gal with a plan. So Jason's older brother owned a Irish bar. / restaurant.
What's your last name for the people at home?
Megan Gailey.
Perfect.
Megan Elizabeth Gailey. My mom is Margaret Louise McMahon. And my cousins are the O'Learys.
So this was manifest destiny that you'd have to work in a bar in Chicago.
Yeah,
an Irish bar,
absolutely.
In Chicago.
Okay. Well, and so the bar was called Bridget McNeil's. It's still around. It's great. So the bar is Bridget McNeil's, and people would constantly be like, are you Bridget? And I was like, no. So I was a waitress at Bridget's. And then, I mean, I didn't know what I was doing.
That some of these stereotypes are like 100% true.
Yeah, yeah.
And
that bar was in the first floor of a high rise.
Okay.
So it was all these old queens and like mean old women.
For the listener at home, you should explain when you say queens what you're referring to, because this is right off of Boys Town.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Like this is, if you were like a man about town in the gay community in the 60s, you still lived in this building.
Thank you. Okay.
In 2009.
Not everyone knows that term, old queens.
Old queens. Yeah, sorry. a gaggle of queens, and then their mean female friends.
God. All right, so it's 2009. You're working with a gaggle of queens at a bar, an Irish bar.
Mm-hmm.
Did the bar do well?
Yeah, so at that time, it was doing... It's always been a bar that's been sustained on regulars.
Okay.
And most of that is because it's old people... Or older people that love
sure.
that bar,
yeah.
and it's in their basement. So, like, they don't have to leave the
That's
building.
That's pretty convenient.
So, even though they're like, this sucks, I hate the fish and chips, they come every day. Sometimes twice a day.
All right, so this is 2009. When did you start doing stand-up all the time in Chicago?
I think the first time I did it in Chicago was, like, March, and I went to the Edge Comedy Club.
The
Edge Comedy Club? Do you remember?
Was that on Chicago Avenue?
Yes.
Okay.
Do you remember Dave Odd?
Oh, yeah.
So this was Dave Odd's baby.
Okay, so this is a comedy club that was kind of not really a comedy club.
Oh, 100% not a real comedy club.
Okay.
A lot of tricked Indian people would be there.
Oh, God.
Paying $20. But at the time when I moved to Chicago, the Edge was, like, super cool. It wasn't cool, but, like, that's where everybody would be. They taught classes there. Like, Dave taught a comedy class mm-hmm. that, like, a lot of very funny people have taken.
Sure.
So it's, like, really great.
Do you want a name drop?
No.
Okay.
But Dave, I loved Dave, and I know that sounds crazy, but he would give us, like, 10-minute sets when we had no business doing 10-minute sets. So you would get to do these. I used to do a show called the Ha Ha Hotties, and it would be, like, the Putter Boz. And this is when the Putter Boz were doing stand-up separately. So, like, Danielle would do stand-up. Tiffany would do mm-hmm. stand-up. Myself. Who else would do? Then there was a Handsome Bastard show. So that was, like, Maddie.
Maddie who?
Maddie Ryan. Okay. Sometimes Mike Joyce would do it. I'm trying to remember who the other bastards were. Maybe Marty. But, yeah.
DeRosa.
Yeah. Okay. You would get to do these longer sets for two people that were very upset, you know.
In the crowd, there are literally two people.
Yeah.
There.
Yeah, yeah. And they would have St. Patrick's Day theme shows. I remember the first, like, booked show I got to do in Chicago was the St. Patrick's Day show. And I had, like, four sorority sisters come.
This seems like a really bad idea because St. Patrick's Day is one of the most festive holidays to talk with your friends and go to bars.
Yeah.
And for stand-up shows, you're supposed to be quiet and sit
yeah.
and watch a show and not interact with the performers.
Well, this kind of went off the rails because the point was for us to be wasted as the comedians.
Oh, that was the theme of the show.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was called, like, the Drunk of the Irish show. And so, like, my friends came, and I remember I was like, I prepared for this like it was an audition at Juilliard. Like, I was so thrilled and terrified and excited. We, like, went to an Italian restaurant before. Like, it was a real moment for me. And then I got there and, like, a man peed his pants on stage. Like,
on purpose or?
Just because he was drunk. So maybe a little bit. Maddie Ryan got banned from the Edge
that night.
What did he do? He stole beer.
Whoa. So it's worse to steal beer than to piss your pants on stage?
In Chicago, yeah. Yeah, I guess.
All right. So you're doing arguably horrible shows.
Well, and so the man who peed his pants, who I love so dearly, I think it was, it may have been his friend. It was CJ Sullivan. I don't think he peed his pants. I think his friend peed his pants. And CJ was supposed to headline. CJ didn't want to go up. That's what it is. CJ was supposed to headline. He didn't want to go up. So we had his friend go up. Friend pees his pants and starts, like, berating Dave Odd, who's running the sound, and, you know, saying that he's this horrible human. So then they're just fighting with each other from the stage. And
this
the sound
is the
booth.
Show.
This is the show. And then you're like, okay.
Did you go up before this or after this?
Before.
Okay. How did you do?
I mean, fine. You know, I had a little green cardigan on, like.
So you were like the belle of the ball.
I wasn't very funny.
All right, so what did your sorority sisters think? Like, we're going to have to support this person in 10 years?
I think they still feel that. I think they were like, this is fun for her. Look at this little hobby. It's sort of like when a rich man, when his wife starts doing something, you know? Good for you, honey.
Do you have a lot of people in your life that still view your stand-up as a hobby?
I would hope now, not so much, but there's definitely like, yeah, I guess so. They wouldn't say that to me, but I'm sure behind my back, they're like, what is happening?
Because you've been doing this really regularly for the past 6 years and probably full time.
Seven and a half.
And probably for the full time for the past 3 or 4, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So let's go back to the hazy days of the Edge Comedy Club. Edge Comedy Club, no longer there for very good reasons.
No. I think they tore the building down.
Sure. It's on Halsted. It used to be on Halsted in Chicago.
Yeah.
Which is not a residential area in any way. There's zero footpath traffic.
Over there. Very frightening.
It's really busy streets. That's all it is.
It's like industrial and right on the river.
Yeah. There's 3 blocks to the east, there's stuff. 3 blocks to the west, there's stuff. But right there, nothing.
No.
Nothing. No foot. Anyways, let's get back to you. What do you do after that? What's the rest of 2009 like?
I think I just kept doing stand-up, and then I knew I really liked working at the bar, but I would work like 3 or 4 nights a week, and then I wouldn't be able to go out and do stand-up. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to find a day job so I could work during the day and then do stand-up at night.
What was the day job that you found?
I worked at a retirement community in Evanston on the North Shore, and I loved it.
Now you're being sincere.
I'm being so sincere.
Why did you love it?
Because I love the elderly, and the place was so beautiful, and they were so wonderful to me. My boss was this truly, like, fun, charismatic, hilarious woman. All the old people were amazing. It was 5 levels of care, so it started at independent living and then went all the way up to 24-hour of care. So you had a bag of characters in there.
What was your role at this retirement community?
I was the marketing assistant, but what my real job was, I was the moving coordinator.
Okay.
So when people would move in, it could be like a very, very traumatic thing to leave your home you've been in for 70 years.
Of course.
And move into what they would see as like a nursing home, even though we called it a retirement community. Mm-hmm. So I would sort of just be given to them and their family, if their family was involved, and just handle whatever sort of like, send us the dimensions. Who is gonna help us hang the blinds? Where is this gonna go? I would help them like decide what they wanted to bring in, help them sort of like plan the apartment.
Sure. So you were the first point of contact for a lot of these people as well.
Yeah.
Well, how long were you there?
I was there 1.5 years.
Okay. Did you form any tight connections or relationships with anybody?
Very, very much so. Yeah. So there was this man, Bill, who I love so dearly, and I have yet to like follow up if he's, I don't think he's still with us. And I like kind of don't want to know, because then it's like, maybe he is. And he was in the 24-hour care, and he, and when he was working, was a very prominent lawyer. Mm-hmm. And so he had dementia, Alzheimer's sort of, and it was advancing, and his physical health was not well either. So he would get up every morning, get dressed in a very nice press shirt, tie, slacks, grab his briefcase, and then he would try and leave to go to work.
Every day.
Every day. And the 24-hour care unit is locked because there are Alzheimer's people in the community. And so they were afraid. He was getting very volatile, and he did not like to be told, no, you can't go out there. It was very confusing for him. And his wife was younger and did not live in the community. So she was able to come and visit a lot, but there were a lot of days where she wasn't able to be there right when he woke up. So I would go at 7:30 Tuesdays and Thursday mornings, and I would have breakfast for him. Like with, not for him. I didn't cook anything. I would go and eat breakfast with him, and we would do crossword puzzles. We would do sort of memory games where I would ask him like, who was your first grade teacher? Who was your best friend in grammar school? Like stuff like that. And we would just chat. And the thought was he would see me coming and then he wouldn't try and escape.
And it worked.
It worked.
That's like, that's delightful.
It was so wonderful. Once I asked him who the closest people in his life were, and he said, well, Joan, that was his wife,
yeah.
Elizabeth, and you.
All women.
Yeah.
Because
I think
great.
He thought I was one of his daughters.
Sure.
But he would like, sometimes he would see me and he'd go, oh. Like he was very, and his wife was like in on it. Like she was like, yeah, send him that 25-year-old girl. Right. And like at first I was like, why are you sending me? And they're like, you're the only hot person that works here. And that's what we need to do. So just go be hot and like hot in the terms of I'm around 90-year-olds. Like, not hot for, like, a 25-year-old, just hot in terms of, like, born
I like that you said
after
you,
1950.
I like that you have to feel modest when you're calling yourself the only hot one, the only 25-year-old hot one.
We're talking about a retirement community.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I guess.
It's hilarious. You don't have to qualify that. It's fine.
Well, and people would be like, I'm going to set you up with my grandson. And I'd be like, oh, awesome. And my boss would be like, their grandson's 62. Like, everyone was so fucking old.
Did you use any of that stuff on stage? Mm-hmm. Did that come up a lot?
I talk about it now.
Yeah.
Because I talk about my grandmother a lot now. Mm-hmm. And so I do talk about the retirement community. And, that, you know, there was this woman, Pearl, who was like my best friend. People would like, I would form a relationship with them when they were moving in. I was sort of like their ambassador.
Sure.
So if I knew or was like alerted to that they were having kind of a hard time, I would go and eat lunch with them and... so I did. Yeah, I really loved the people.
Do you think you have more empathy than the average performer?
I just, old people are my thing. I just will always see them and love them and want to like be a part of anything. Like there's definitely times where I'm like, oh, I would quit stand up and just open an adult daycare with my mom.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That would bring you joy.
It would bring me so much joy.
What?
'Cause I left this job. I went to Ireland with my parents for like a few months because my dad was working in Ireland, and then when I came back I got a different job at the community. Like I wanted to go back there.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like you chose the wrong career path?
There's definitely times where I miss it.
Really?
Yeah. And like I nannied in New York and I miss that dearly too.
So you just like people?
I do. I like people.
When you hear comics saying like I just hate people or that's part of their act, what do you think?
I think, you know, I'm different than people. People are different than me. I've always liked people. My mom took me to nursing homes a lot when I was younger. She taught at a vocational high school. She taught nursing there. And so they would do their clinicals in local nursing homes. So I would go with her. And then she was a hospice nurse. And so I would go with her on visits sometimes. So I've always, and then my grandmother lived with us. So I've always enjoyed being around old people. I love nursing homes when most people like hate them.
Yeah.
And I was in a really beautiful, nice one. So that stigma, I wanted to be like, no, come to this. It's like people would come and they were like, this is
and this
crazy.
Is in Evanston?
It is
we should give the name out.
Well, I don't know. I don't, because
you're
I've
only
said
saying nice things about
it's
it.
It's called Three Crowns Park.
Perfect.
And it's a wonderful place.
That's
I love
great.
It.
How would they be offended by that?
Well,
we're not
know.
Giving away last names. We're not trying to get anybody
know,
in trouble.
But I know, but you know, who knows? I said naughty things on the internet.
Oh, stop it. The people are... If anybody could understand naughty things, it's older people in a retirement community. They've gone through everything. Did they know that you were a stand-up?
Yeah.
What did they think?
I think, you know, some... Like, Pearl, my good friend, she had been an original USO girl. So, she, you know, that type of character is like, you go, you know, like... You're a little whippersnapper.
Really?
So people with very fun personalities, and then they'd be like, you got to bust me out of here. I want to come. So they were into it. And my boss and then one of my other coworkers who was like kind of my boss too, they would come and see me if I ever did shows on the North Shore.
Did mm-hmm. they like it?
Yeah,
was
they
it
did.
Weird for them?
No,
was
I
it
don't
weird
think
for
so.
You?
It sometimes it was weird, but they liked it. I would, that sort of thing makes me more nervous than my parents coming.
Really?
Yeah, because my parents have to love me. And like these strangers can just be like, oh, I don't want to be around her anymore. You know?
You're going to be back in Chicago next weekend.
Yeah.
Do you tell these people when you're coming back to remind them? Or
yeah.
No?
You know what? I need to. Thank you. You've reminded
oh,
me.
Good.
I will email them. And then I have, an aunt and uncle and cousins in the area, and then I have sorority sisters. Like, I'll tell all my friends.
Well, it's different now because now when you go back, it's like a fun, she's making it type of thing. Like, you're headlining a club.
Mm-hmm.
There's no, and it's a Second City related stand-up comedy club. There's mm-hmm. no shame in that. It's not like, hey, come down to my Thursday night. I'm going to do 8 minutes at this bar.
Yeah.
It's in
but
the
I
back
made
room.
But I people come to that, too.
Exactly. That always was weird because you would bring the quote-unquote normal people in the crowd when usually it's a lot of dirtbag stand-ups and or performers. And I'm not trying to insult performers.
Oh, no, we're gross.
Okay.
Gross people.
Okay. But you didn't really ever fit in that stereotype of a stand-up in Chicago. You kind of always had a full-time job. You took care of yourself. You went to the gym. You had goals that weren't just, I want to do more time.
Yeah.
Did that ever feel like maybe I was in the wrong city?
No, because I think that there were other people, and this has sort of been a nice thing for me always. Like when I was in college, I was in a sorority, and it was like a, like sometimes people would be like, well, I wasn't in one of those sororities. I was in one of those sororities. Like it was very intense and crazy. But then I was in theater. So it was like I could leave the sorority and go be with these theater nerds. And then when I was tired of the theater nerds, I'd go back, you know, and be with the fun, mean blondes. So it was like kind of nice to escape from both. And so even though I love my normal people friends so dearly that live in Chicago, if I had to be with them all the time, we wouldn't be friends. They would hate me,
sure,
you know?
Sure.
And I would hate them. And the same goes for comics probably. But towards the end, the people that I was like closest with were more similar to me than dissimilar. They also had jobs and or, you know, clothes and friends and our crew felt like we had it like a little bit more together.
Sure.
Than maybe some outlying.
Well, when did you leave Chicago?
2014.
Do you remember the season?
It was the end of May, June. So, like,
so you were there for roughly 5 years.
Yeah.
When did it feel like it's time to leave?
I don't even think it ever felt like that. I just sort of knew if I don't go now, I'm probably going to stay here forever, which is not a bad thing. Like there's still times where I'm like, oh, I could go back to Chicago and have like a perfectly wonderful, happy, great life. But there was kind of this part of me that was like, I want to at least like see if I can do more stand-up wise. And I knew I'd sort of reached the ceiling in Chicago.
What is the ceiling? Because most people that are listening are not stand-ups.
Mm-hmm.
What is the ceiling for success in Chicago as a stand-up?
You know, I was getting to do all the shows I wanted to do. I was getting to work the clubs, and then I was, you know, going on the road somewhat.
But when you say the road, I'm assuming you mean the Midwest.
Midwest, yeah, okay. Yeah, Midwest, and just like featuring places, you know, not going anywhere else. But I knew that I wasn't going to be able to get like, and some people have been able to do it, and for probably many factors, I was not able to. I wasn't going to be able to like make a jump to getting a manager in Chicago,
sure,
or to get to do TV from Chicago, or to kind of take like a next step past what I was already doing. And I think more industry goes now. I think they do look, and you know, tons of people got to do Last Comic from Chicago, which is great. They still go and audition a lot of people for Montreal there. But for me, I was just like, it's not gonna happen here, mm-hmm, for whatever reason.
Were you able to pay your rent just doing comedy in Chicago?
I was for the last 2 years.
Did that feel satisfying or did that...
It did. I went back and worked at Bridget's every now and again. So I would waitress and bartend there sometimes once a week, sometimes like once a month. And it did. It felt great. And it also made it a lot harder when I went to New York because then I couldn't. You know, then I was nannying.
This is about you, but your brother also bartends about the same amount, and he doesn't need to as well. He has a full-time job he's successful at, yet he chooses to bartend once a month. Why? Why did you guys want to do that?
I think we both liked the places we worked at and liked the people that came in and just sort of like that. I liked waitressing a lot better. He likes to bartend. Mm-hmm. But yeah, just sort of like being around people. The day that I left Bridget's, like my last day working there before I moved to New York, I sobbed for probably 6 hours.
Have you been back since?
I have, yeah.
Do they welcome you with open arms?
So much so. They're so like kind and wonderful to me. And now it's a different owner. You know, it's gone through many different stages, but it's still like I will go back there this weekend at least for like a drink just so I can see everybody. And those people, those regulars, they would come to shows. They're still like extremely supportive.
That's so great.
Yeah.
What is one thing that you could have not done now in your career if you didn't spend 5 years in Chicago?
I think going on the road would be a lot harder.
How so?
I don't think New York, just doing stand up in New York for 5 years, you would have. I wouldn't personally. I don't want to project this onto these other weirdos. I wouldn't have the wherewithal to go into like a brewery in rural Kentucky and be able to communicate with everyone in a way that was like,
oh, to just connect on a human level.
Yeah.
So it's not, I thought you meant like to go to promote your show in a brewery in rural
Kentucky. No. Yeah. I think just like a little, you do so many bad shows in Chicago and they're in such aggressive environments sometimes that you're like, when you get out and you get to do like a okay show, you're like, oh, this is the best thing I've ever done, you know? Because you're just prepared for like someone to be like, fuck you, turn on the Blackhawks. You're like, okay, I mean, I agree with you.
You're a sports fan too, which mm-hmm. is also weird for both being, this is a horrible stereotype, but it's true for Chicago. You're a female, you're mm-hmm. a woman.
I am.
And you're a stand-up comic. And I you am. Genuinely follow all of the major sports, except baseball, I think. That's because of where you're from.
I follow baseball and hockey very like, but you're, like a girlfriend trying to be nice to her boyfriend.
Got it. You're number one a Colts fan, and yeah. then number two a Pacers fan.
Yeah.
And you'll if the game is on, you're watching that in the bar.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah.
You're not ignoring it. It's not just background noise for you.
No, I would not. There were two times this year where I got tricked into hosting a show on a Sunday night, and the Colts were the flex game, so that it didn't. I had agreed.
Hold on, really quick. Is this Comedy at the Knitting Factory
no.
that you're talking about?
No.
Okay.
I got asked. It's actually a great show. It's If You Build It at UCB, and I did not get tricked. It was just like, hey, can you host this Sunday?
A show that many other comics would like to host.
I would love to do.
At a venue that people move to others. Like, they move to New York to perform at the UCB.
Well, sad people. Very sad people. But yes, I'm sure.
And you'd rather be probably at home watching the Colts.
Definitely. But because the Colts were the flex game, so I didn't know. I always will consult the schedule before I accept like a Sunday
NBC
night.
And I think I actually ESPN for Sunday Night Football, Monday Night Football, there's a handful of flex games, usually in the second half of the season. Mm-hmm. That's what you're referring to.
Mm-hmm. So well, I missed
if
the.
If you're a Bears fan, that has not happened this season. And
right.
So everyone needs to know
hey,
that.
Hey, listen, my boys are starting at home too, you know? So it's not like our britches are that big.
Okay.
I just was with a 90-year-old, so that's why I said britches.
By choice, you were with an 80-year-old and a 90-year-old.
Yeah, my great aunt and uncle.
Now, did they see your most recent television appearance?
No, but okay. They really want to.
It's not you. It's on the
YouTube.
Internet.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
It's not.
For some reason, I did this like commercial for Hyatt when I was in the Hyatt in Chicago, and so my mom, I think, was like, "Oh, they'll really like this," you know, and so she sent that to them instead of my stand up, but I'm gonna send it to them. They want to see it.
I want to talk about money, but I'm sure you don't want to give out specific numbers because it's like rude and stuff.
Uh-huh.
But really quick, did you make more on that Hyatt commercial than you did the entire year doing stand up?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, just wondering. I thought so. By the way, I might cut this, but I probably won't. I want to say you're the first ever person. Where a promoted content came up in my Twitter feed, and I was like happy to see it because it was you in a GIF or a little video. That was so weird.
I wonder if they knew that you liked, you know, that we were friends,
yeah.
that you followed me and I followed
I had no
you.
Idea.
Because sometimes I'll get on Facebook and it's like so. I have been just like texting about mm-hmm. like I want to get. Something very like a Colts chair, and then I'll
sure,
get on Facebook.
And that's
and
a targeted
like,
ad, but I could guarantee you I was not tweeting about hotel stays
no.
across the country. And you're in a commercial for the Hyatt.
Yeah.
Did you have some sweet Hyatt perks now?
I don't, but they did give me a crazy suite when I was there. I mean, it was
you
beautiful.
Were, well, yeah, you're filming a commercial for them.
And they were so nice to me.
Well, yeah, you're filming a commercial for
I know,
them.
But I'm saying I expect
Why are you
so little.
By that?
No. I expect. So little from everything.
When was the last time you went on stage with any fear?
Last night.
Really?
Yeah.
We're in Washington, D.C. right now.
Yeah.
Why did you have any fear?
Well,
you were performing at the Big Hunt,
yeah,
which is a
show,
bar.
And the show was packed.
Yeah, it's
and
in
it
the basement.
It was great. But it was, like, very packed.
You've done shows there before.
No, I haven't.
Oh, okay.
I've never
I apologize.
Been there. And I was like, oh, boy, I don't know how this is going to go.
At most, there's 100 people there.
There were definitely.
I know the fire code there. At most.
I think it was the fire code was broken.
No,
I,
and the basement. You're in the basement of the Big Hunt?
Yeah.
You're wrong. It's under 100 people. You're performing next week and you're going to have 200 people a night.
Yeah.
Why does 100 people in a city
well,
that you're not from freak you out?
Last night I had like cousins that were in the audience that have never seen me. So it was sort of like, ugh. And then I had college friends there. I almost felt like. It was like my wedding reception, and I wasn't talking to enough people. And then you're going to go and like do a weird thing. So it was.
How did it go?
Oh, it was fantastic. It was so fun. It was so fun. But like, I wasn't like fearful, but it was like, ooh, I don't know how this is going to be.
Are you enjoying what you're doing?
I am. There are definitely moments, and I have always had this, and when you sort of like mention this, people will be like, oh, I have that too. That's okay. We're just like, I don't know if I can do this anymore, yeah. You know? But it is like really fun. And I have been trying more and more because it was when I first moved to New York, it was very, very hard.
Yeah.
And then almost like overnight, it was like, oh, great. This everything has worked out and been fun.
When you say overnight, though, I'm assuming you mean about a year. Because I remember seeing
you,
I think I saw you like seemingly like every 3 months for about a year, and then as soon as it was like a switch that flipped,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it wasn't overnight; it was a year of your life.
Yeah, it was a year.
It was a year,
but it felt like it was terrible on a Tuesday,
sure,
and then on Wednesday it was fun.
Good. I'm glad that it felt that way. Did it ever feel like that in Chicago?
Oh yeah,
definitely. Really?
Yeah, when I first was there, It was hard to, because you would be like, oh, this person wants to be my friend. This person's great. But you didn't like know, and you didn't have enough. Like in New York, I've always had friends. I'd be like, no, don't talk to them. They're go away. But like in Chicago, I had to figure all of that out, as everyone does,
yeah,
for themselves.
Yeah. Is there anybody that you wish moved? This is a compliment. Anyone, mm-hmm, that's still in Chicago that you just wish got out, because like if they just weren't there, the rest of the country would know who they are and would love what they do.
I definitely. That's a tough question, because there's people that haven't moved and you're like, I get why you didn't move. There was some sort of like, you had a family, you had a job, you had like all these different. So like purely stand up alone, like Sean Flannery. But like Sean has an amazing life. He has a better life than 99% of the people I know. So it's like, yeah, he doesn't need to move to like validate what he's doing. He's been on TV. He's super funny. And I would rather watch him than most people I see do stand up. Probably Danny Callis. He's from there, you know? So he loves Chicago.
If you were from there, do you think you would have stayed longer or left sooner or ever left?
I mean, I think I'd have more money, you know?
If you were from Chicago.
Yeah, because I would have just lived at my parents.
Sure.
And then done stuff.
Yeah, because you'd like your parents.
I love my parents. I would live with my parents right now.
That's a little odd for a stand-up for me.
Yeah, I love them very much.
Good,
they're
for
very
you.
Nice to me.
They are very. I like your parents,
yeah,
a lot.
Yeah, very nice.
I don't think I've met anybody else's parents in stand-up like I've met yours.
I mean, my mom, I think she's getting a big head, you know? It's like, people ask about her. I'm like, I don't, she's fine.
Now that you've done TV, do you feel validated?
Sadly, yes.
Okay.
You do, but like in the sense of like, my parents have this Christmas Eve party, and I'm like, finally, people know that I'm not crazy. You know, like... And like the thing is, they do. I mean, I am crazy. Like,
yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, totally.
Like,
it's part of your act.
This may fall apart like today. But you do. It's like at least forever. If nothing if happens ever again, it's like I was able to do that one thing, and that feels like kind of a relief. It was such a relief when it was done in like such a nice way. But just like, okay.
Well, I follow you on social media, so as soon as it was done, you went to the show, you aren't Conan, and you went to the show with a former Chicago comic who lives in L.A.
Yeah.
You're a former Chicago comic that lives in New York. You ate burgers, and you, uh-huh, were with your mom. Like, you did the, yeah, most Midwestern things possible. The man you went to the show with, his name is Joe Kilgallen. He's a fantastic stand-up. You guys hosted a sports talk radio show together, mostly about Chicago sports.
Yeah.
Like, you're doing the most Chicago things,
yeah,
possible, not in Chicago.
And it was all Chicago people that, like, came to the show that night. You know, it was kind of like a little, like, Chicago reunion for us.
Do you want to move back?
Oh, eventually. Because I would like to have a family, and from being a nanny in New York... And from the little time I've been in LA, and maybe anything could be different if you're rich. You know, you could live anywhere if you're rich. I would rather raise a child in the Midwest than I would on either coast.
Any one reason?
Just a yard, you know? I don't know. It's just...
they got yards in California.
But I think this is what it is. I loved my childhood. So, like, I want my kids to have a childhood as similar to mine as possible. But if I meet people all the time that are like, I'm from Indiana. And I'm like, don't you love it? And they're like, no, what's wrong with you? So like, I liked it. But like, if I hated it, I'd be like, yeah, I'll raise my kid in LA and they'll be an LA kid.
Have you been to Chicago with your current boyfriend?
No. But his brother lives there.
Okay, so have you guys talked about possibly moving back together?
Well, he's from Cleveland, and he really
loves
Cleveland.
Which is the opposite.
But I love Cleveland. I really do. I love Cleveland, I love Indianapolis, and I love Chicago. But Chicago is sort of like a nice compromise. To go from like L.A. to Cleveland, you're like, what happened? Like, are you okay? But like, yeah, it's all sort of like... dependent on many, many factors. But I do love Chicago. I spent 2 weeks in Indy last week, and I'm like, it's great here.
Really?
I love it there.
Really?
I mean, everyone looks terrible. They look awful. But, like, it's fun.
You just, because you feel like a 10 out of 10 no matter where you go. And you could probably afford everything so much easier.
Yeah. You feel rich and beautiful. Like, truly. Like, even at your very worst, people are like, wow, who is that?
If you'd like more information on Megan Gailey, make sure to follow her on Twitter. It's @MeganGailey, MeganGailey. If you'd like to follow us on Twitter, we're @UbiEstMiaPod. And we're also on Facebook. Just put UbiEstMia in that little search bar. If you'd like to follow me on Twitter, I'm @YMTE, and that's because the other show I do is called You, Me, Them, Everybody, and we're at YouMeTheMEverybody.com. Our theme song is by Daniel Knox, and our art is by Dmitry Samarov. Thanks for listening, and have a wonderful night. I'll hunt the places that you've been scared.